Everyone can take a seat. Would the council members please take the seat? And Councilmember Clay won't be here tonight. And do you want to make a comment about that real quickly?
Sure. Councilman Clay did regret not being able to be here tonight. He's only missed, I think, one other meeting in 16 years, but his family did have some medical issues needed to attend to. But the good news is they found out everything was in good shape, and so he is home with family tonight. And this evening, he and Vivian are celebrating their 55th wedding anniversary. So he said the best news he got was that all the medical things are fine. So
happy anniversary.
Well, happy anniversary to Jerry and his wife. Okay, so we just came back from a closed session. And City Attorney, is there anything to report?
There's not.
Nothing to report. So we'll go ahead and start our regular session. And we start with Pledge of Allegiance by myself. So please stand. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
And Mayor Barreau.
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
The next item on our agenda is a presentation tonight. And the presentation of resolution by Assemblyman Sam Blakesley's office commending City of Atascadero for efforts to generate economic activity by creating economic stimulus plan. And I believe Debbie Arnold is here.
That's right.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Debbie Arnold representing Assemblyman Sam Blakesley. And I'm here tonight, let's see if I can juggle all this, to present the City of Atascadero with this assembly resolution, which reads in part, whereas the pride upon which the City of Atascadero was founded is evidenced in all facets of its everyday life, the hard work of its citizens, and the involvement of its citizens in local government, all of which combine to make the City of Atascadero a desirable community in which to live. And whereas in response to the Atascadero City Council's number one goal to increase revenues through economic development and stimulate the city's economy, the Atascadero Office of Economic Development was established in December of 2008. And whereas since its inception, OED has worked diligently to advance its goals to improve and facilitate the development process in the City of Atascadero, serve as a liaison between the city and the business community, act as an ambassador and liaison between the business community and the city, attract and retain business, and promote the Atascadero community. And whereas one of the city's primary goals is to stimulate economic development, particularly in the downtown area, and the Atascadero Community Redevelopment Agency is focused on removing blight and improving economic conditions in the redevelopment project area, particularly in the downtown zone, be it resolved, Assemblymember Sam Blakesley takes great pride in congratulating the City of Atascadero upon the establishment of the Office of Economic Development and for its role as a leader in the development of strategic contingency planning as a response to the current economic recession, points with immense pride to the many fine opportunities provided to those individuals fortunate enough to call Atascadero home, and extends best wishes for its continued growth and prosperity in the years to come.
Thank you. And Wade, do you want to say a few words or recognize staff?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The City Council has established economic development as our top priority. In response to that, working with the council, we've tried to make development.
Thank you, and I hope we have that displayed out in our front entrance of City Hall.
Thank you, Debbie.
It's always good to have something positive. Our next item is our consent calendar, and there are 9 items on our consent calendar tonight. The first two are draft meeting minutes for the council meetings of May 26th and the special meeting on May 26th as well. We have some accounts payable for January, February, March, April of this year. And number 7 is a zone change for Stadium Park. That's the second reading. And 8 and 9 are temporary road closures. Anyone from the council want to pull any of these items? Seeing none, anyone from the community wanted to pull a consent item? Seeing no one, I'll accept a motion.
I move acceptance of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Mayor Councilman Kelly. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Bayrou?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Next item is updates from the city manager. Mr. McKinney?
Mayor and Council, thanks again. As an update, we wanted to remind you about the Emergency Management Institute grant that the fire department and the city have received. $300,000 has been designated to a national training in our behalf. The representatives from that training have already been in Atascadero and begun surveying the city for how our activities, our disaster plans, and our departments and equipment are set up. They were very impressed this last week with the progress that we have made with respect to emergency planning, especially with the leadership of Kurt Stone and the fire department, what they have put together. One of the real highlights, and I know many of you saw it in the earthquake, was our GIS system. And I think many of the agencies have now actually adopted the system that we have for the emergency. Within the same afternoon as the earthquake, Mr. Frace was able to produce for us a GIS map, a map that actually mapped all the damage across the city in the same afternoon. And by the next morning, we were able to make presentations to the city council. And of course, we were able to set up a temporary city hall by the afternoon of the earthquake. So many of our plans are in place, and this is certainly really the top of the top. It's really an opportunity for us. There's only 12 cities elect or have this opportunity annually, and we've been we're the recipient for November. Our training will be in November, at the last week of November, actually the Sunday following Thanksgiving. We'll take somewhere between 55 and 75 regional people. That would be community members here, city staff members, community members from our regional agencies like Paso Robles and Templeton, San Miguel, and then regional agencies like Caltrans, the Sheriff's Department, CHP, the Water Company, and others that will participate in a disaster program with us. We'll do training in the morning and actual exercises through the afternoon. We hope to be able to take at least two council members with us to participate in the activity. And so we're going to need in the next few weeks to be organizing who we take with us to Emmitsville, Maryland, to learn about the next phase in our disaster training. So we're really excited. Both the grant that we've received, it totals around $300,000, plus the really intense training that'll be on top of some really good emergency planning that have been conducted out of the fire department for the last many years. It was kind of exciting. This plan, just as a piece of history, now that we're a ways away from the earthquake, although we don't have City Hall back yet, we produced the plan just a few weeks before the San Simeon earthquake. And so it was all really fresh in everybody's mind, and it really made a difference as we were having those emergency meetings. We understood what all of those forms Kurt Stone was talking about actually meant and where we were supposed to be assigned, and it was a really great opportunity. So this will be a really great hands-on opportunity, and we're going to be inviting people to participate with us in the next several weeks.
Sounds like a great opportunity. Thank you, Wade. Next item is community forum, and this portion of the meeting is reserved for persons wanting to address the council on any matter that's not on the agenda. And everyone has 3 minutes. Please state your name. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Robert Campbell. I am pastor at Santa Margarita Community Church, and here as a member of the Ministerial Association tonight to ask that you, council, and all present would bow with me for a moment as we pray for our community. Our God, tonight we acknowledge you as the one who governs all things, and we are grateful for it. We have learned and know that you govern in righteousness and justice, and you've given us in this city these women and these men who lead us rightly and who lead us justly. And we pray that you would give them the ability to continue to do that for our well-being, for the good of us as the citizens. Give them humble hearts, honest hearts to lead well. Give us a willingness to follow, courage and boldness to participate as citizens. And again, we just want to thank you for this community. And we pray that you give us the ability to live well in it, to live well in this community as neighbors. Thank you again. Let this forum be a time tonight that is honoring to all and beneficial for all. We pray in Jesus' name, amen. Thank you very much.
My name is Ann Ketcherside, and I think this is the first time that I'm going to say 3 minutes is too short. I'm going to talk on one subject and then about three people. The meth labs are popping up everywhere in the houses in Atascadero. If you think someone in your neighborhood is making meth, please call Atascadero PD. They will help. Kansas and Oklahoma have homes blow up every month. It's really sad to see landlords lose their houses blowing up to meth labs. So please, let's not let Atascadero get to this point. And the secondary smell from meth labs is a billion times worse than any cigarette. I wish I had 30 minutes to talk on these people I'm going to talk about. I got all ready to come right after Marge Mackey died, and I was so glad I didn't. I had already cried for 4 days. And I really want to thank Marcia and all of you. You did a beautiful, beautiful tribute to her. I think everything has been said about her. She was wonderful. She gave so much to this community, and she's one of the sweetest people I've ever known. And I'm just really sorry that she's not around town, but maybe she's in a more peaceful place than where we are today. The next person I want to talk about is Scott Bond. He is a pastor of the Creston Community Church. He has Lou Gehrig's disease. And I did not get a hold of KPRL. They have the number. Mike is having the town get together, and everybody is invited. They're going to have a box there, like a Valentine's box. It's going to be for cards and money financially to help Patty and the three children that he'll be leaving behind. From what I understand, Scott Bond has taken the church from 30 people to 300. I met him years ago at a meeting where I praised the Lord. And after I left, Scott Bond boldly stood up when everybody was laughing and said, "He is our King." So if there are churches listening, please, pastors. Mike said that you can get your churches to contribute money and then bring it to Creston between 11 and 1 or any other time for Patty and the children. The third person, I've got 22 seconds to ask for prayer. My son, Rod Chalfant, is 40 years old and started bringing people to Jesus Christ. Lori Brown was one of those people that passed away 6 months after Rodney brought her to Jesus Christ. My son, Rodney, is sitting in Texas. He's a chaplain in the Army. And he has a brain tumor that has gone from the size of a golf ball to the size of a baseball in 6 days. And tomorrow they're going to find out just what it is. So I'm asking the whole community to please pray for my son, Rod. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Barbie Boots, 3370 San Fernando Road. The other evening I attended the ribbon cutting for Alvord Field concession stand and the restrooms, and I just want to say thank you for that happening, because I know it took the council, it took everybody to be in on that. And what's so nice is that now that we have the restroom and we have that building, we're beginning to see the look that the master plan for the Lake Park had, what we had in mind when we did that. So that really was a nice thing, and it's going to make that area look very special. Another item that I want to thank you for was the resolution that you did, the presentation for Marge's family. They really appreciated that, and I was with them afterwards, and they thank you all very much for that recognition. And I know, Mayor, that you had that in mind when I was here for her birthday. So thanks for following through on that. Then, on a real happy note, don't forget the wine festival this Saturday. I hope to see you all out there. And remember that it benefits our special zoo. So look forward to seeing you. Thanks.
Good evening, Jim Shannon, Tascadero. I want to piggyback on what Barbie said about the ceremony last night at the Alvord Field, and it was nice. It brought back a lot of memories. I can remember when I was a young kid going over there and watching the high school practice, and Ralph Sachs was a coach back then, and getting a baseball bat out of the garbage can there and nailing it back together that was broke and taking it home and using it forever. But all those memories and all the games I played there and the games I coached there, the games I watched my son play there, you know, it's a nice thing to see that the city worked together with the Babe Ruth to go and do that. And I think that's a good thing that the city needs to partner with a lot of these other groups and community to do things that the city can't do by themselves. And if there's groups out there that are looking for an example of what can be done when you work together with the city, that a snack bar and stuff over there is a good example of that. And also, I know we got the award tonight for the stimulus package that the city put together, and we see that going to work with the work they're doing up here at the north end of El Camino with the streetscape, and I see the work that's being done. I think it's on San Andreas where you're putting the sidewalks and stuff in. That's all good things, and I just, again, like to come up here and touch on the positive things about what we're doing in the city, because you know, a lot of the time that stuff's not covered by the media. As soon as there's something negative, you know, we have that certain group of people in our community that run to those things and do that, and the thing that was funny to me, all the good things that happened here, we don't see those people at those good things that are happening, but I see them at all the bad things and see their names in those articles or on those radio shows talking and speaking negatively about our city. So I want to be the other side of that and touch on all these good things that we have going on. And, you know, my hat's off to the city staff, because with all this rough time that we've been as a city for a long time, and they stuck to their guns, they keep doing what they're doing, and we're seeing the fruit of that pay off. You know, again, you know, you don't hear all those good things and the news media doesn't cover a lot of that stuff, but I'm proud of what you guys do, and my hat's off to you. You know, you take a lot of hits from people. You get called, you get accused of cronyism and all that stuff when it comes to the buying the old Chamber of Commerce building for Main Street, but that money we spent is going to come back over and over, so it's well invested. And again, just good job on that, and good thinking and planning ahead, and keep up the good work. And you have the support of me and a lot of the people out there, so keep doing that good job. Thank you.
Good evening, city staff and council. Lee Perkins from Atascadero. This is in regard to the community input for the Walmart EIR project. I read the staff report, and the list of potential project issues are pretty comprehensive, except for one mentioned in the report but not in the potential project issue, and that's global warming. Considering the environmental conditions, it is becoming apparent that businesses must take into consideration measures to reduce their contribution to global warming. We do not live in isolation. Climate change must be considered by businesses building to this scale, such as a Walmart and a Atascadero. Walmart has waged a public campaign to promote its sustainability efforts in recent years. Now that the rubber is hitting the road, it is time for Walmart to step up to the plate. Regarding the community input, your own staff report reads as though the community input meetings will be scheduled in the process. This is customary in preparation for the EIR scope, that input be given by the community first. Yet a combined meeting with the Planning Commission and City Council is tentatively being planned for August. While to date we do not have dates for community outreach neighborhood meetings to solicit input on the project. Input from the community needs to be digested by the city staff with preferred project parameters and definition before it is heard and approved by the Planning Commission and the City Council. So I am wondering why this August meeting is scheduled. CEQA, on another point, CEQA laws are very clear that the city notice the community about such community meetings. I would ask that for such an important project as the Walmart project, that a city postcard be sent out with the information as postcards have been in the past on Walmart meetings. At the last meeting, Councilperson Kelly said common sense would be used to decide what city meetings outside the Planning Commission and City Council need to be taped. Common sense would be to tape these important meetings. On another related topic, in August 07, the city kicked off its Just Listening community meetings to get input from the community they would then use for a five-year economic development strategy. Since then, ADE has weighed in. When can the Atascadero community see this five-year plan for the combined ADE and Just Listening community meetings? Thank you.
Good evening, Council, staff. Mike Latner, Vision Atascadero. I, too, would like to strongly urge that the Council establish a public workshop for review of and a public input for the environmental review process for the Walmart Del Rio development. We want to strongly encourage that the Council conducts this review in a way that expedites the process. The citizens of Atascadero, like you, are strongly concerned about the possibility of delay in litigation. And we know that Walmart was recently rebuffed by a court in Southern California regarding a development in Yucca Valley that, because of its decision not to take into account the environmental impact of a development in Yucca Valley, we also know that increasingly the Attorney General's office is using AB 32 and enforcing rules in AB 32 and CEQA to enforce stricter environmental standards. And we believe that it's in the city's best interest to be upfront about compliance and standards and to have strong public input at the beginning rather than risk delay and litigation later on. And so we would like to have a public workshop so that we can have citizen input and talk about public standards and what the public would like to see in that development early on in the process so that we can mitigate environmental impacts and have alternatives included in the environmental impact report. This follows ADE's recommendation that the public be consulted at every stage of the development process as the economic development strategy goes forward with applied projects. It also follows your own advice. Each one of you is on record as encouraging increased citizen participation in the process. And so we want to follow through on that. It is crucial for the council and citizens to be vested in this process, and it's crucial that public legitimacy is maintained as the economic development process goes forward. Thank you.
Good evening, Ron Walters. I'd just like to talk a little bit about the Walmart project. It seems that the last few meetings we've had, a number of the people that represented the 30% minority election vote in the city are constantly questioning the project. I think it's important in this economic times that the Walmart project go ahead quickly. If they increase in space and add a couple of restaurant pads, I think that would be good for the city, the economic viability of the city. And I think it's important that the 30% minority do not unduly delay the Walmart project. It's very important to the city that we get this project up and rolling. And if we want to have so much public input that we grind it to a halt, that's not going to be good for the city. And we know that the economic condition is poor right now, and this is one thing that will help us. Thank you very much.
Ray Wyman, Atascadero resident. I want to take just exactly the opposite tack from the previous speaker. I think Those of us who originally were not in favor of a supercenter recognize that it is going to be built. We have no reason or no desire to delay the project. We recognize that it is going to be an important source of revenue. But I believe quite sincerely that it is possible to make some suggestions and improvements that will not delay the project, but will add immeasurably to the value of that store, to Atascadero, and to Walmart. A lot of good ideas have come from those five seats up there, but there's some good ideas out here too. And in order to really be able to hear those, I would strongly suggest the idea of a public workshop along the lines of the ADE workshop. I attended that. I thought it was an excellent example of how people from all points of view can get their ideas across, and it resulted in an excellent ADE report. So I earnestly suggest that you consider adopting that format for public input to the Del Rio project. Thank you.
Good evening, staff, council. Tom Colmar, Atascadero. I, too, would like to put my two cents in for the public's input on the Walmart project. It's certainly not going to grind anything to a halt. In fact, if you don't do it, that's what might grind things to a halt. If you don't do it the way it's been spelled out by the group that's doing the EIR. And in their document, they, like the staff, have said that the public input is intrinsically important to this project. They say there will be meeting or meetings with an S to get public input for parameters and scope of the project, and that to facilitate the process, the MBA, the EIR consultant, said that they would attend a community outreach neighborhood meeting held to solicit input on the project. It further goes on to say they will help support a high level of public participation throughout the CEQA process. Prior to release of their notice of project, MBA will participate in a community outreach meeting to obtain input on the project from the neighborhood residents and other concerned citizens. The meeting will be led by the applicant with city staff. The results of the meeting will be used by the city staff to develop a preferred project parameters and definition. The project applicant and city staff will then present the preferred project parameters and definition to a joint city council planning commission meeting for approval. I understand that the meeting on August 11th is to be a joint meeting that the public's to be involved, but my question is, how can that be when the public input needs to be first so that the parameters and scoping can be looked at by the staff, the applicant, and then brought to the council and to the plan commission for their comments and for them to look at it? So I would encourage that that process happen. In other words, if there's going to be public input and you're still going to go ahead with the August 11th meeting, although I don't think Walmart, as far as I know, has put in their final project yet, so this all may be hypothetical. But if that's to happen, then I think the public meeting needs to be before that August 11th meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else want to speak? Seeing no one approach the podium, I'll bring it back to the council. And I think there were a few questions that need to be answered or clarified. Mr. Fraser, Mr. McKinney, would you like to comment on what we anticipate is going to be the series of meetings or how that's going to come about?
Yes, we're still waiting right now for Walmart to bring in their complete application. They're scheduled right now to bring that in tomorrow. We are scheduling a kickoff meeting with the EIR consultant for this week so that we can get the process started. One of the first steps will be for the EIR consultant to issue the notice of preparation, which will be the legal notice to the community and the public that this project is moving forward. After that, we do see a series of meetings to involve the public. Right now, the neighborhood workshop meeting is likely going to take the format of some sort of an open house. We are planning to schedule that before the joint session with the City Council and Planning Commission, which is scheduled right now for August 11th.
A question about that. Now, that is going to be the responsibility of the applicant, which would be Rotman Walmart. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's city policy on general plan amendments. This is a general plan amendment that the applicant hosts some sort of forum for the community to review and comment on the project.
So comments that are received there, would those necessarily come to the city council, or is that just their information to incorporate into their plans?
What will happen is at this open house, city staff will have city comment forms available. We'll encourage the public to submit their comments to city staff so that we can provide them to the city council.
And it was my recollection when we had the consultant come here for approval that they would do a separate meeting before the joint meeting. Is there some, because it sounds like that's what the public heard too from the three speakers that mentioned that they would be interested in having a separate meeting before the joint meeting.
And that's what I'm trying to describe is that open house style meeting is the format that the applicant has chosen to provide that public neighborhood meeting. The nice thing about the open house is they can run it 8 hours so people can drop in any time during the day. They'll be able to review all the exhibits, ask questions of the applicant and some of their engineering specialists. So people will have more opportunity to review and study the project and then make comments. And then when we hold the joint session, the public will then be able to further comment on any of their concerns or ideas about the project, having been able to review it in some detail the week prior.
Okay. I see some lights on this. So, Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes. Could you clarify that one more time, Warren? You say the meeting would be before. Do you mean immediately before the same day? It would be from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and then the joint meeting of the Planning Commission and the City Council would be, let's say, at 7?
No, we expect it to be the prior week, a week before.
Okay. So they will have time to tabulate and bring things back and prepare it prior to the meeting is what you're saying?
Correct.
Thank you.
Councilman O'Malley? O'Malley, excuse me.
Thank you. Well, I know I've participated in a number of meetings over the last 3 years as we've gone through this process, and I think often I would have to ask you to review the schedule and timetable of yet the many meetings that are before us to just complete the EIR process. So this is not going to be the only public meetings, this one open to the public all day and then the joint session. That's just the start of the EIR process. I assume there's going to be, could you give a little bit of a feeling for the additional opportunities for public input over, I believe, a 6 month plus process?
Yes, the way it'll work is after we hold this joint session, the EIR consultant will start the technical studies. There won't be any public process during that time because they're just doing the technical analysis. Then they will prepare what's called a draft EIR, and then that will be circulated for the public for, I think, about 45 days, where that gives the public, once again, the opportunity to look at, review, and then comment on the draft EIR. Then we are required under CEQA to respond to all those comments. Then following that process, then we can go to the actual formal hearings. There'll have to be a Planning Commission hearing and then finally a City Council hearing prior to approval and adoption.
So that's probably a real critical time period after the initial public questions and all of our questions are given in and there's some formal research and then a draft brought back. Then there's an opportunity for additional round of questions, and those have to be responded to. If someone submits a question in this time frame after the EIR has started, it must receive an answer as part of the report. Is that correct?
If the comment is received as part of the draft EIR, then it will be responded to as part of the EIR process.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, I just want to maybe get some feedback from the council because I know we've all stated at one time or another that we think public input is very important in big projects. And I know that since the election, when we had that, 70-30, I keep hearing those numbers. I don't know if that's perfectly accurate. But the project has changed quite a bit. And so I'm concerned that if we only have the open house, which is not recorded in any public way, and it's not even our information because it's not being hosted by the city, that we could be missing an opportunity. And I think it would be good if the council directs that we have a separate public meeting that's held by the city so it can be recorded, where we can just receive input and feedback from the public on the meeting. I too do not want to delay the project. It's going to happen. That's not my intent.
This is a non-agendized item, an item that came up during public comment. And I agree we may be able to give some brief direction, but I think if we're going to get into much discussion, it's an item that should be agendized.
Let me refer to the city attorney. Could we give direction at this time, or do you feel like this needs to be agendized?
It should be agendized if you're going to give direction.
So is there consensus from the council that we agendize this for a future decision on whether to hold an additional public meeting?
I would go along with that.
Okay. Okay, so there's consensus.
I think we want to make sure that everybody's satisfied that this is as open as it can be, and I think everybody in the city should have the opportunity to come to the podium and voice their opinion on it out in the open, not pass notes and letters through staff back to us. I think we have to have a direct line of communication between the people in town and the city council.
I can support it as well, but I don't want to delay the process.
Right.
I want this to be in a timely manner.
Right. I think we all can say that we don't want to delay it, but I think we all really want a good project, and I think if we can get buy-in early on, that would be a good thing.
Well, let me ask a question, because we're saying we don't want to delay the process. I understand that at our next council hearing, it is agendized to discuss the EIR. Would that be the point in time to have this discussion if we want to add any additional steps? But are we delaying it if we bring this back for discussion, or can this discussion be part of the agendized item that we have in 3 weeks?
The next time this item, the Walmart, is scheduled for the agenda is August 11th, not July 14th.
Okay.
So we could agendize. I'm not exactly sure what you're asking me to agendize. We're going to agendize whether you're going to have additional meetings in addition to the August 11th meeting.
That Correct. Would mean then we would need to put this process off at least a month, it looks like.
Right.
Well, I think we can discuss it on July 14th, because we're getting into discussion once again. But I think the intent, and I think that's very clear, that we do not want it to delay it. So if there could be, just suppose that the Walmart could have their meeting 1 week earlier, the next week we have the workshop, and then the next week we stay on track with the August 11th meeting, if that's possible.
In reference to these meetings, I don't have any objection to going off schedule and having special meetings.
Right.
Just directed towards the Walmart issue so that there are no delays.
Right.
Well, and that might be a way to go, is to suggest we simply add, and this is what we have done in the past.
Right.
We've done
have
more
a special meeting.
Meetings than mm-hmm. any other city on similar topics. Maybe we schedule a special meeting prior to, so we can stay on the track.
So do you
just to let me help clarify that Walmart is in control of doing their public meeting consistent with the general plan. And so they're planning their meeting the first week in August. So it would be like the 4th or 6th, I think, were tentative dates for that, the Tuesday or Thursday. The following Tuesday is the joint meeting. So if they have their meeting on Tuesday or Thursday, in order to have a special meeting between their meeting and your next Tuesday City Council, you're talking about Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday.
And the more I think about this, I think we may be getting the cart before the horse, because, you know, Warren, there is a formal process that we have added meetings to already to get to this point. What I would suggest is we stay on track of we've already got it planned for a community meeting per our policy, and then a joint session. That is the time to consider and hear from the public. Do we want to insert additional public process? And that's certainly something we could do at that meeting. It's all the public will have had a chance to see what Walmart has. Folks haven't even seen the most recent plan. The recent plan will be available at this public meeting. Folks can then comment to Planning Commission and Council, and then that would be the appropriate time to say, you know, we really need more public process during this EIR process. It seems like then we all know what we're talking about. And my concern is, for 3 years, we've gotten into lengthy discussions over something we didn't really have the facts before us yet. And I'm afraid we might be doing that again. If we stick with the process, we actually have a project before
us. We're talking about this. We're not supposed to be talking about it. I think we already have consensus.
We haven't been cut off by the city attorney yet, I've noticed. So I'm just suggesting we stay with current staff.
You cut me off. So I think we need to agendize this. We have consensus to agendize this. We'll know more in 3 weeks, and we can make the decision then. I think we need to leave it there.
Good.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Question for the city attorney. Are we getting into any legal or litigation kind of issues if we don't follow the schedule?
Well, I haven't heard that you're not going to follow the schedule. What I've heard is that you might want to add an additional joint meeting.
Well, what the public expressed is that their schedule is set forth to the best of their knowledge was that there would be public meetings prior to August 11th. And if we don't have those meetings, is that going to lead to litigation in the future?
I don't believe so.
Thank you.
But okay, I do think that this is an issue that's probably been addressed sufficiently, and if it's going to be added to the agenda, if that's the direction of council, to add it to the agenda for July 14th to decide whether or not you're going to have further joint meetings beyond August 11th. Is that the question?
I think that's what we have consensus on.
All right.
Okay. You have enough direction, Mr. McKinney?
Yes.
Thank you. So let's move on to our public hearings. Item B1 is the Business Stimulus Program and Confirmation of Annual Assessment for the Downtown Parking and Business Improvement Area.
Yes, good evening, Mayor Burrow and members of
Council.
Thank you. Very pleased to discuss this with you this evening. We know this is one of your absolute top priorities, and the Office of Economic Development is looking forward to sharing this with you. Really, I'm very excited. I wanted to introduce the Office of Economic Development. We're all here this evening. We'll be sharing in this presentation, which is very exciting, so you can see each of the members of the team that are doing the good work that you've led us towards. And so, Warren and myself, but Bridget Burns is in our Community Development Department. Bridget, Dave Muhausen, our Building Inspector Extraordinaire, Kelly Gleason, Senior Planner, Ken Foreman, our Building Official, standing up. Scott Hallett's with our fire department. He's doing his primary job this evening. Audrey Banks is out at the pavilion for us. Jerry Ringel from our finance department. And David Athey, our deputy director of public works. This is a very high-energy group. We have very interesting meetings where we're discussing the future and trying to implement your initiatives. And the second lives of us, whether it's hobbies or family connections or that, also have ties in tourism and restaurants and wineries and that sort of thing. So there's really some good experience and discussions in the group. Again, the Office of Economic Development serves to improve and facilitate the development process, serve as a liaison between the city and the business community, attract and retain business, and we're going to be working hard on that this year, and to promote the community, as you heard from some of the radio ads that just came through. Committed to progress, action, and prosperity is the tag for the Office of Economic Development. And so tonight we're asking you to approve the business stimulus plan, and that's our first staff recommendation. Our second staff recommendation will be continued. We're going to present it this evening, but the resolution declaring the intent of the city to levy the assessment was not posted in time. And so this portion of the report will be continued to the next city council meeting, but we will still address that issue and have it for you on consent. If you adopt the plan, this is the community impact of the plan this evening. If you adopt it, one, you'd be encouraging development of new retail business, we believe. Two, there could be the potential for new housing and building rehabilitation in the downtown area. We've seen great progress there from the private sector, but there is an initiative that could spur that. Creating more attractive buildings, particularly in the downtown area. Promoting community pride and awareness. I think this is something we want to continue to share with people. From the advertising campaign we just had, people said, oh, we have that restaurant here, we have that store here. The comments overheard at the farmer's market on Wednesday, I didn't know the Silver Ball Arcade was here, or Frankie's was open in the evenings, or several businesses, a pet store downtown. And so I think as we continue to promote, you can shop here and have your experiences in Atascadero, we'll all be better off. And we also think that this plan could provide more parking in downtown, which is something we consistently hear. Again, your goal is economic development, and we're definitely working towards that. If you recall, earlier this year, you released the local stimulus program, which was aimed at getting several million dollars, $6 million into the community quickly in capital projects and hiring local contractors. We're well under that. This is an extension of that now, providing direct assistance to our local business community, and this is something that you said you were interested in. The stimulus dollars from this program will be directed to the Redevelopment Agency and downtown specifically. So with that, I'm looking forward to the staff of the Office of Economic Development to share with you the specific components of the program.
I'm Ken Foreman, billing official. The first component of our business stimulus plan is to develop a comprehensive marketing plan. Our goal is to reach the business audience and raise the Tascadero's profile. We do this by developing radio and television advertisements, and we've already started this. You may have heard these advertisements on the radio. We also do this by improving our city website, and this has been done. If you haven't seen our website lately, please check it out. Developing our Office of Economic Development website, that's soon to be unveiled. We've been working on that. And also to develop print advertisements in targeted publications such as Sunset Magazine, the AAA Tour Book, and the Pacific Coast Business Times. Direct marketing through industry specific publications, and by distributing email newsletters with tourism and economic development information such as Colony Days, Cruise Night, commercial real estate and wine industry information, and other local events and attractions.
Good evening, Council. My name is Bridget, and I am the Administrative Support Assistant for Building Services, as well as an Economic Development Officer. Tonight, I'm talking about fee relief, and as we know, when running a business or having a business, there's lots of expenses, and one of them is a building permit to do some of the modifications you might want to do within your business. You might want to relocate, start, or enhance it. So currently, since I do a lot of or print all of the permits, I kind of know what a majority of the minor permit tenant improvements cost, somewhere around $600 to $2,500. We came up with this by helping pay for the first $999 of a building permit. We hope to encourage new businesses to relocate to the downtown redevelopment area. And for those businesses to redevelop their existing businesses in that area. Our goal is to strive to enhance businesses in the redevelopment area. Businesses that will benefit from this relief are retail and restaurants. This program will begin July 1st or somewhere around the first part of July and will continue until the first 25 building permits are issued. In addition to the retail fee relief, we also have all commercial buildings, new and additions, within the city limits. We provide a deferral agreement contract. So the owner has the opportunity to buy into this contract and have the opportunity to defer their development impact fees prior to getting a final on their building permit. So they don't have to pay for that, and it reduces the costs up front for construction. That is all I have for the fee relief.
Next, we understand that commercial brokers have a huge influence in the community, in our community, and commercial brokers in the county and in Santa Barbara County, Monterey County, as they look to site new businesses, expansions of restaurants, move industry. We want to try and reach out to the commercial brokers. The brokers in this town work very hard to promote our community, and they do a good job at that. But there are also several brokers from the outside of our community looking at us. And so we want to make sure we build relationships with them. And in a way, we're looking to do that is twice a year, invite the commercial brokers to the community and show them what's going on, show them plans for future projects, show them spaces, and share with them the types of businesses we believe we have a market for and provide them the market information that we have. And we want to continue to establish regular communication with those brokers.
Good evening. I'm Audrey Banks. Some of you might recognize me from the Pavilion on the Lake. I'm going to talk for a couple of minutes about the components of the stimulus plan that involve purchasing local in Atascadero. The proposed business stimulus program will increase the local vendor purchasing preference from 2% to 5%. This change in the policy applies to city purchases for general supplies, materials, and equipment. The existing city purchasing policy states that while no preferences for vendors are available, a 2% variance will be allowed for the purchase of equipment, supplies, and trade services from vendors located within city limits. The proposed stimulus will increase the variance to 5%. An example of how this would be carried out is if the city needs to replace tires on its vehicles. If the city obtains a quote from an Atascadero merchant that is up to 5% higher than an estimate from a merchant in a different city, Atascadero would be able to purchase the tires from the Atascadero merchant, therefore keeping the purchase local. Again, this policy revision applies to purchasing goods and supplies. To assist with shopping local in Atascadero, the Office of Economic Development will purchase reusable cloth bags that look similar to this bag. There might be a variance in the type of material used, but the end result is going to look very similar to this one. And the bags will be free to the public. They'll be made available at Farmers Market, City Hall, and other local retail stores. The Atascadero Office of Economic Development would also like to partner with organizations such as the Chamber of Commerce to promote their campaigns such as Shopping Local. We do recognize that there's other organizations that are specializing in areas that will influence the economic development efforts, and we'd like to continue to support them in implementation of all of their initiatives. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. My name is Dave Melhouse, and I'm Senior Building Inspector and Economic Development Officer for the city. I'm here to discuss the streamlined permit processing and what the Office of Economic Development is doing to improve customer service. We've made significant improvements in the permit process by reducing time frames. What used to be 8 weeks for a commercial plan check is now 4 weeks. What used to be 6 weeks for residential addition plan check is now 3 weeks. So that keeps things rolling. We've simplified minor plan check submittals by providing templates which allow a tenant to or contractor to simply fill out the blanks on the sheet, submit it with their permit application, and we have it back to them completed within 2 weeks. Okay, we're currently working on a template for the installation of photovoltaic systems that will streamline the permit process for when the city's AB 811 solar financing program goes into effect. So it'll be the same as a tenant improvement. It'll be a sheet they turn in with the permit application and we get it back to them. We're currently issuing over-the-counter permits for water heaters, electrical panels, and furnace replacements. And my favorite, without a doubt, is our on-site visit program that we put together. We've performed several on-site visits with commercial property owners, tenants, architects, engineers before the spaces are leased. That way we can answer their questions and find out, you know, tell them exactly what they will need to put in the plans so when they submit the plans they're complete or you know, for the most part complete. And that reduces that plan check turnaround time that on things that we could have caught in the very beginning. Okay. When we receive a request for these site meetings, we look at it and find out, what department needs to be involved in this meeting. So we'll bring fire in, public works, planning if necessary, and that way we'll all be there to answer questions for these tenant improvement processes here. And we've brought two new businesses into this city, and we've got two more on the table. And I think it sends out a real positive message to everybody that, you know, the city will come to you, to your site, and, you know, let you know what you need to do. We're here to help, okay? And hopefully this, you know, we'll get the word out to others that we are committed to the progress, action, and prosperity. So thanks for your time.
Good evening, Council. Kelly Gleason, Planning Department and the Office of Economic Development. The next component of our program is our revised downtown facade program. So a couple of you, a few of you may remember that we had a facade program a couple years ago. We've learned some things from that facade program, and we're hoping to continue that in sort of a phase two of this revised facade program, which we hope to go into effect later this year. What we're hoping to do is focus on downtown businesses and improve the appearance of some of the businesses down there that want to look a little better, get that first impression out there to people driving by. So part of the components are this, are architectural and design services. The city hopes to have a design professional on contract for use by some of these businesses that enter into the program. We're also looking to match some funds to cover some of their expenses. So we're looking at a $2,000 match for exterior building signage, which will help with that first impression and help some of the facades look a little nicer downtown and help businesses afford the signage that really presents their, puts their best foot forward. We're also looking for a $999 match towards exterior design services and material costs, which would help them add awnings, change paint colors, things of that nature, as directed by our design professional. This is a first-come, first-serve program that we're looking at. We believe it can be available to a minimum of 10 businesses, and obviously, depending on the monies that they use, it could be available to more. So we're expanding the program to hit more businesses than last time. The next portion of the program I wanted to touch on was the abolishment of the downtown business district fee, which I believe you all heard about a meeting or two ago. Basically, our business license fee is doubled within the Business Improvement Association area. And so we're looking to, and that portion of the fee goes to fund Main Street, but Main Street does have some other funding sources through the stimulus program. So we're looking to basically reduce that fee to a zero fee for the fiscal year 2009-2010 in hopes that we can attract some businesses to downtown that might otherwise go somewhere else because of the larger fee. And that concludes my portion. Thank you.
Good evening, Council. David Athey, Economic Development Officer, Deputy Public Works Director. Parking is vitally important to an economically healthy downtown. Staff is proposing $500,000 in the next city budget to do parking projects in the downtown area. Now, this money is RDA funds, Redevelopment Agency funding. This money will be used to implement the 2006 Parking Management Action Plan. Short-term work from this plan includes improved parking signage, which the city is actually going to be starting to install public signage on our lots tomorrow. This will go on throughout the week until done. Make pedestrian path connections from those lots to the downtown business area. That's part of our efforts towards wayfinding in the downtown. Currently in Streetscape, we're putting some downtown signage in as part of the Phase 2B project. Improve lighting. We've already put downtown standard street lights in our lots. We'll evaluate that, possibly some more lights going in. Create or improve existing bicycle facilities. So as part of the Streetscape, we've been putting bike racks in. We've been evaluating bike lanes. The Phase 2 project will include new bike lanes on El Camino Real from Traffic Way to Rosario, and widen bike paths from Rosario to San Jacinto Road. We'll continue to evaluate that. We'll also work with private lot owners to maximize parking on their lots where possible in a joint effort. Long term, we're going to develop additional surface parking, either through easements on private lots or the acquisition of city lots in the downtown area. Also provide additional support for alternative transportation to reduce the parking demand downtown. That would include busing, bicycling, pedestrian facilities, and other. We're always open to other suggestions. So as part of the downtown parking, staff plans to have a pretty aggressive approach in the next 2 years. Thank you. Warren?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Warren Frace, Community Development Director and Vice Chair of the Office of Economic Development. I want to talk to you a little bit about affordable housing in the downtown. I think this is a really exciting idea that the group has come up proposing, is that
for each unit, we would allocate up to $100,000 that would be in the form of a long-term loan. These units would have to be brought up to current standards, renovated if they're a historic older building. They'd be in a form of a 55-year loan, so the unit would have to stay affordable for that period of time. In exchange for that, the building owner, property owner, would get some funds that they could put into the restoration and rehabilitation of the building. We're looking for them to reestablish or rehabilitate the bottom floor so we have a nice commercial use on the bottom and then a nice affordable unit on the upper floor. We think that's going to be very attractive to a couple of our older buildings and even some of the newer two-story buildings that might have been built downtown, and we're recommending that this also be added to the program.
So our recommendation tonight is that you approve the stimulus program as proposed. These funds have been budgeted. This is a plan we're presenting to you to move forward with. Some of the alternatives that we're recommending to you may take a little more time. For example, the program Mr. Frace just spoke about will have some contracts and conditions to pull together. Others we hope to roll out quite quickly. Time will be of the essence. So that concludes our report. We'd be happy to answer questions.
Councilmember Kelly?
As a new city council person, only being here for 6 months, one of my goals was to change the perception of Atascadero not being business friendly. Nowhere in my wildest dreams did I think we would be anywhere close to where we are today. And I would just like to commend staff for just doing an outstanding job. Tom and I go around the county to the Economic Vitality Corporation and some other places. And they're all talking about Atascadero. We did get one email saying, we don't know what you guys are doing up there, but nobody can keep up to you. There was a lady that's going to open up a hardware store here in town, I think, in the next couple weeks, has got her permit. I talked to her the other day, and she said she's been in the county for 25 years, has done business in several cities throughout the county, and she's never been treated so well as she was here in Atascadero. Tom and I saw Mr. Zaki down in San Luis at the Sam Blakesley place. He got up and said there was only one place that was good to do business, and that was in Atascadero. So we are friendly to business. Dave says we're working at it. Dave, I think we're there, but we're going to get a lot better. And once again, I want to thank all of you really sincerely for doing a great job. Thank you.
I just have one clarification question. So our current budget. Welcome.
My name's David Bence, and I live in 3F Meadows. I'm talking about the business stimulus program, and I think staff has done a pretty good job on coming up with some creative ideas in that. But the staff report doesn't make it clear to the public what has been done to date. You know, much progress has been made to date, but there's no specific mention of what progress has been made. And the staff knows what has been made, the city council knows what has been made, but the public doesn't. That needs to be clarified in future reports about your successes so that they can be enumerated in the report so that people understand what the city has done. When I look at the fee relief program, I question why only 25? What happens if tomorrow, as a result of this, you get 100 businesses that want to apply for this? 25 is really, that's only $25,000 if you're going to give up to $999. It doesn't make, $25,000 isn't much incentive for a downtown business to come up with more money to improve their storefront and their landscaping and their facade improvements in that. It just doesn't make sense. So you need to expand that program. I think you need 100 or more. Support buying locally. I've dealt with this problem four times in my career. And four times it's been ruled that it's illegal for the city to give a gift of public funds on local purchasing. You can have preferential treatment, but you can't give a cash reward for it because that goes against your own purchasing policy, which states that it's the policy of the city to introduce competition and fair and open competition. That goes against your own policy if you're giving a cash reward. And I think the city attorney, if you ask him to look into it, will come up with the same answer, that a cash reward is not possible. It's a gift of public funds, and when it's a gift of public funds, the city council could be held personally responsible for that gift. And day. I don't know why you don't have any daily permits that you could get issued over the counter by people that just want to put in small improvements in their homes and that. I've been in other cities, and they do it in a day very easily.
Can you please summarize? Your time's up. Could you please summarize?
Can I speak later?
At community forum next time. I mean, this is the public comment time. You can always submit it, and we can get copies to the council if you like.
Well, it doesn't allow me to adequately explain what I wanted to explain, but I understand. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Lee Perkins from Atascadero, and I applaud the staff for these new business stimulus programs. It pretty much answers my question about the economic development strategy that the city is going to have for at least the next 5 years. And I'm wondering, that option that businesses can get if they have housing above and retail below, does that include the Sunken Garden? Thank you.
Seeing no one else approach the podium, I'll go ahead and close public comment, and I'll bring it back to staff to see if we can get some answers to some of the questions. One that I thought was of particular importance is the concern about to support buying local, increasing our variance from 2% to 5% for bidded purchases. City Attorney, could you please address if you've reviewed that and if you have any concerns?
I did review it, and I have no concerns.
Okay, thank you. And then the other question, I think just the last speaker was wondering if Sunken Gardens is included in that area for the affordable housing. I assume it would be, but can you confirm that?
Well, there aren't any structures in the Sunken Gardens, but buildings around the Sunken Gardens that might qualify, that are might have residential use upstairs, could qualify. What we're doing is looking for buildings that have the capacity for residential use upstairs.
Okay, so if there's a single story building anywhere downtown that could add a story to make affordable housing. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then Councilman O'Malley, you have your light on?
Well, yes, and there are many more items that weren't included that I think that staff has streamlined and made great progress on, and it probably is a good suggestion of Mr. Bentz that we get a little more of that information out, and I do commend staff for just an outstanding job. And
that's a great idea. But as Mr. Bent said, is $25,000 enough? How did you come up with the number? I don't know. I look at, again, the facade improvement program and think, well, are they going to be getting building permits? And then when they are finished, then we'll get some tax increment because they'll be reassessed. I don't know. I look at the parking and it says $500,000. I don't know where it is. I don't know why that number was chosen. I don't know. So I'm feeling a little in the dark. I don't know whether anybody else feels this way. I like the concept, but I would like more meat, personally.
Well, I would respond, and having looked at this and compared with other cities and looking what other areas are doing on economic stimulus, I think this is an important first step, and as you say, there's more information available, I think, from staff. But I agree that we may start down this path, and we may agree that this is working very well, and we want to do more of these items. And I think this is a working plan. I think what's important is to get things going. And I think just as you both came on with some new vision, this is an implementation of much of that new energy and vision, and we can continue to adapt it over time. I think the important thing is to keep forward momentum. We lost momentum in this community. We are gaining it back, and we have heard this literally all over the county, and again, as evidenced by the recognition from Sam Blakesley's office, because part of why we got that recognition is Sam has held forums all over his district, and as Bob mentioned, we were the only city recognized by business leaders in two counties as the city that was the most business friendly. And I think we're on the right track. Let's do more of the same, but let's keep moving forward at this point.
I have Councilman Kelly. Do you want to be next after that, Roberta?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I agree with Tom. And when you look at some of the numbers in the agenda here, there's additional appropriations may be needed. Hopefully the programs do take off like wildfire, and we do put more money into it, right, and the town downtown grows. But we have to start somewhere to grow with the program, and we need to get going because we really are on a roll for our downtown. And we're going to learn by this. We'll probably make a couple mistakes along the way. I know I have erasers on my pencils, and that's what they're there for. And we'll find out what those mistakes are, and when we get done, the program will be better. So I fully endorse the program. Staff's not going to go spend any money wildly. We won't let them do that. So I'm ready to go forward.
These monies are just what's budgeted so that we could cover those costs. You can reallocate as if these programs are successful or if they become successful, or you may want to this would just be to stimulate some growth, and maybe then it'll cause other things to start funding on their own. So our idea really is to put a quick stimulus into the community, especially the business community, so that reinvestment starts to occur and then it runs on its own, and that we cause private reinvestment. So programs like the Shop Local will require an ordinance. The housing component will require a program to come to you. The facade program will actually be developed out. There's some changes from what our previous program was. Those things you'll end up seeing.
Thank you.
And before we could do another round of lights here, I'd like to say that I hope that this is, you know, putting a fire under some people who have property downtown and or who have businesses that want to relocate and are thinking about our city. And this is exactly what we need to do. I have a lot of trust in staff. It was great to have them here today to see their faces and really know who's working hard behind the scenes. I'd like to call the question, unless you really guys really want to do another round of
well,
lights.
Just in response to one
quickly,
of the questions.
Quickly, please. Thank you.
Well, I think much of this is an outgrowth of activities we did a number of years ago. We didn't see much implementation for a couple of years, but what we had done a couple of years ago is we implemented some very good studies. We did a parking study that was very well done, and that's what some of this information can be now built on. There was a very good study done on signage in town, and again, we really involved the business community in the past in coming up with a lot of these decisions. We used to have a facade program. It got canceled. We're bringing it back. But when it was implemented before, we had the business community involved in making those decisions. So I think what we have done is we've freed up. We are working like a council should. We've said our policy is to make economic development our top priority, and we want to move forward. We've now seen what staff can do when you free them up to implement policy. They've come back with some strategic plans, very well thought out, based on some research, and we want to keep monitoring that. But I think we need to encourage this kind of follow through on our policy direction. And with that, I would call the question.
Councilmember Kelly, did you want to make another?
Just real shortly. I think it's been
the motion to approve the business stimulus program. Correct?
Okay, and then we will.
The resolution is going to come back next.
We'll come back later. Okay, very
okay.
Good. Thank you.
I just want to make sure everyone knew what they were voting on. Sure. Okay, Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor Burrow.
Yes.
4-0 motion passes.
So we'll move on to item 2. Proposed revision to the Atascadero Municipal Code prohibiting smoking in the Charles Paddock Zoo and designated spectator areas in the city's outdoor recreation areas and parks. And Brady, there you are.
Thank you, Mayor Bayrou, members of the City Council. This item this evening is to consider some smoking restrictions at our parks and outdoor recreation areas, as well as the Charles Paddock Zoo. Wanted to tell you a little bit about how we got where we are this evening. Initially, the Parks and Recreation Commission have given you a recommendation this evening to prohibit smoking on the grounds of the Charles Paddock Zoo and restrict smoking in certain designated areas in our city parks that you identify this evening. The community impact would be to restrict outdoor tobacco smoke, and this is intended to promote public health by safeguarding the public from harmful secondhand smoke. And harmful has been identified secondhand smoke, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, as a Class A carcinogen, which is one of the most hazardous and dangerous carcinogens known. Smokers would be required to leave designated spectator areas in the parks and not smoke at all within the confines of the Charles Paddock Zoo. Our Parks and Recreation Commission really has spent a lot of time over a year researching and working on this issue, and really all started in May of 2008 when the commission received public comment from three Atascadero High School students and Ms. Lefebvre regarding tobacco litter and having the city consider creating a policy to ban tobacco use in parks. And from that meeting in May led to a lot of discussion, and in July of 2008, the Parks and Recreation Commission formed a subcommittee consisting of three commissioners. It was chaired by Commissioner Dan Chacone and also Commissioner Ann Hatch, and former Commissioner Jay Sechrist comprised this subcommittee. And I really have to commend those three individuals because there are over 90 cities in California that have passed some type of ordinance restricting smoking in public outdoor recreation areas such as beaches and parks, as well as a number of zoos as well. So they were essentially charged, the subcommittee, with coming back to the full commission with a range of policy options once they did their research. And the subcommittee did meet four times and developed an opinion survey. Some of you may recall the opinion survey. It was conducted at a special booth that the Parks and Recreation Commission had last September, I believe it was, in front of the Lake Pavilion at the Chamber Showcase Mixer. And overall, the survey, they came back. They also held a public hearing. And regarding the survey, they had about 205 surveys returned, and they were distributed other locations as well as the Chamber Showcase Mixer, including the Kiwanis Club and some other groups that responded to the survey. In the survey, I'm not going to go into great detail about that, but there were 148 respondents that felt that the city should develop some type of policy on outdoor smoking in recreation areas. 56 said no. I think there was about 103 out of the 205 survey responses that said there should be some type of total ban on smoking in outdoor recreation areas in the city. So the full report is in your packet from the subcommittee, as well as the results from the survey. The subcommittee came back to the Parks and Recreation Commission with a range of three options. They were to simply take no action. They also came back with the idea to recommend implementation of partial restrictions based on certain criteria at our parks and recreation areas. And the final one was to consider implementation of a total prohibition of smoking in city parks and recreation areas. Ultimately, the full Parks and Recreation Commission voted 6-0-1. Commissioner Zirk abstained to recommend to the City Council to prohibit smoking in the zoo and designated spectator areas in city parks. So I think we need to talk in detail about what this designated spectator areas in city parks means and define that. So the first thing, and give me an idea of where these areas actually are that they recommended. So what I'm going to show you is a little bit different. The couple of the exhibits that I'm going to show you tonight is a little bit different than a couple of them in your packet this evening, and that's because the ones in your packet were done by the park staff, but the ones I'm going to show you follow the commission's recommendation, because I think the park staff went a little bit beyond the spectator areas in some cases. This first slide that you see on the screen behind me is the lake park, and the areas that we're recommending where we are would like to suggest designating as no smoking areas are here last night. We were all at Alvord Field last night, and you can see the ball field here. The area would be highlighted in this yellow L shape, and that would essentially be the area where all of the spectators gather to watch the games. We do have bleachers there, and as you may have noticed last night, and for the benefit of the audience, what I've noticed at athletic events over the years is the way spectators view the games are different than the way they did, say, when I was growing up and participating in sports. They don't always sit in the bleachers. In fact, I think only about, oh, maybe a third of the spectators anymore at a lot of these games where there are bleachers actually sit in the bleachers. Most of the time, you see a lot of people bring their own folding chairs and set them up behind the backstop or in certain areas. And so particularly at our ball fields, and that would include Colony Park, Paloma Creek Park, and the Lake Park, you have people that don't just sit in the bleachers, but they sit along the backstop fences. And, of course, the dugouts are very close there at Alvord Field. This is the zoo, so this is the entire area where it's being proposed that there'll be a prohibition of smoking within the Charles Paddock Zoo. Also, I'm fairly certain that most of you are aware there is already existing state law which prohibits smoking within 20 feet of an entrance of a public building, such as City Hall, the Lake Pavilion, and so forth, as well as a prohibition of smoking within 20 feet of a public playground. So that's state law that is already in effect. So what you see here on this diagram is an area in front of the Lake Pavilion entrance, and then you see the playground is actually right here at the Lake Park. This slide is Paloma Creek Park. And Paloma Creek Park, as I mentioned, has a Little League field, and these are the spectator areas where the spectators gather. Yes.
Going back to the Lake Park, you had a circle in the middle, which I think is the barbecue area. So that was taken out?
That was taken out. That was the park staff recommendation. I removed it because it's not a spectator area. It didn't really follow the commission's recommendation. And so I removed that from the designated area.
As a follow-up to that, and I'll ask it now since we're kind of on the topic, what about when someone does reserve the spot and they're going to have a gathering of people? Would that then kick in and you would request as they pull the reservation saying, you know, you have a gathering, it's an ordinance that there's no smoking?
No, that's not being proposed in what we're suggesting tonight.
And Councilmember Kelly, you have a question?
Yes, I guess a follow-up on that. The area in the barbecue area, I know a lot of times there's events where they have all of the tables lined up there and there's quite a few people there. It seems like there wouldn't be some type of restriction then when there was a event going on and there were 50 or 100 people trying to eat their meal there.
Well, you know, it's a difficult policy issue, I'll admit. I think what we think about in terms of those reserved areas, the group barbecue areas, is that would be largely self-enforcing. If a large group rented those barbecue areas and those picnic areas and they chose to smoke, that would be permitted under the ordinances that we're talking about. You know, we looked at that and decided that, you know, if the city were to say there was no smoking in there, those areas, and then the areas were rented by a family group having a picnic or something, and they had smokers, they wouldn't be able to smoke there if we implemented that as one of the designated areas for no smoking. So that's one of these policy issues that we have to wrestle with, is what is in the best interest of the common good. I think the commission's thinking was that if you have spectator areas such as Little League fields, Babe Ruth fields, the bandstand in front of the Lake Park, if someone chooses to watch a concert in front of the Lake Park bandstand and they have five smokers sitting around them, they're pretty...
I was really kind of thinking of something like tonight at the park where the chamber is having their chicken barbecue. I know they serve between 500 and 700 dinners, So there seems to be a lot of people that are congested in an area, and it's almost like a restaurant. I don't know if it's something that we should look at a little bit further.
Yeah,
or not.
We certainly could look at it. In the case of the chamber barbecues, you're right. They're not just a private group. That's open to the public, and there are large numbers of people coming and dining there in those groups. So that might be something that we would want to take a look at. But as I mentioned, that was not the recommendation from the commission.
Councilmember O'Malley, quick question.
Well, I have several quick questions. But I'm looking at this. All the park areas are primarily oriented towards families and family activities, it seems like to me. And I understand that enforcement is a separate issue, and we probably don't have enforcement capability. But like anything else, I assume this is complaint-driven. So at least by expanding areas that are designated as non-smoking, I assume if someone's smoking and it's not bothering anybody, nobody complains, and that's will go on as has. But by having a larger area designated as non-smoking, if it is a problem for folks in the area using the park, then something could be done. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, the issue of enforcement is one where I think the intention and the long-range concept is to change the culture where smoking in public places is not acceptable behavior, because it
well,
does contribute
my question
to
anyway. So let me go on to my other quick question. The mayor is going to cut me off.
Okay.
And take up all my question time. So let me move on. Looking at the ball field, to me it makes perfect sense where you have spectators gathering, but I'm curious why you certainly wouldn't be expecting to see smoking out on the ball field during games. And I'd be concerned about, if there aren't games going on, it wouldn't be a particular good area for smokers to congregate, because there seems to be remains left behind sometimes, and that would be where, you know, children are playing, etc. I'm just curious why that is such a small boundary around the ball field, for example. That smoking isn't usually associated with folks playing in sports or observing sports,
running their dogs, but that was not something the commission chose to take on.
Okay. But we could expand
these areas. Definitely. I think we're having this discussion tonight. It's certainly excellent evaluation of the policy issues, and the council can choose
Thank
to include barbecue areas or other areas.
Councilman Fonzie.
Just a question regarding the Parks and Recreation Commission's review of this. I wondered if they had taken into account that the barbecue pits themselves put out quite a bit of smoke. So there's, you know, it seems rather an odd one to prohibit smoke when there's a lot of smoke.
Yes, in fact, that was brought up at some of our public meetings, and the commission did hear testimony from the public regarding the barbecue smoke. However, they realized that, you know, that issue was separate, and we're addressing tobacco smoke with this ordinance, because that seemed to be what was creating the public controversy.
And also, I wondered if you had considered the baseball fields, as Council Member O'Malley stated, these are mainly used by youth, and it's illegal for them to be smoking anyway.
Yeah, we don't have that problem. So in some cases, you know, when you talk about some of these issues, we don't want to solve a problem that doesn't exist.
Thank you.
So I apologize for that long interruption, but at least we got some of those questions out
That's
of the way.
Okay. Moving on to Paloma Creek Park, I was beginning to explain that we have a similar situation with the ball field here for the Little League field. And also at the softball fields here, these fields are used by high school teams, but also by adult teams, mostly in the evenings. And you do have a lot of children of the ball players, the adults playing here. And they're usually in these spectator areas in the bleachers between the two ball fields. This is a spectator area here and here. This is the children's playground where the state law would apply already. And then this area If you can picture Paloma Creek Park in your mind, we have the two athletic fields, the soccer fields here used by primarily by Atascadero Youth Soccer Association in the fall. But right in the middle of those two is a mound between the two fields. And that area is used for
all your diagrams. There's not any way you would know where those particular lines are out in the field. This is kind of a generalized.
Yeah. However, if the council concurs with the Parks and Recreation Commission recommendation, and we decide that these areas that we're discussing tonight and that I'm going through with you, how we would identify these areas is through signage. That's how all the other cities do it. So, okay. For example, here at the Little League field, we would probably post a sign here right in front of the bleachers.
That answers my question.
One on the other side. So it's through signage.
And, Brady, is it some cities also just choose that all athletic venues are smoke-free? Is that correct?
Yes,
that would be another
definitely.
Way of looking at
there
it?
Are a lot of cities that just say, we don't want to deal with designated areas. We don't believe tobacco smoke is appropriated in any of the parks at any time. And they just prohibit it, you know, sort of a blanket ordinance or blanket policy. And that's certainly one of the options available to you tonight.
Okay. So you can designate athletic venues, all parks, any mishmash of different combinations.
Yes, that's right. Like, for example, we're suggesting a total prohibition in the zoo. Some cities have suggested a total prohibition at the beach, you know, if they have a beach. And so it could take all the entire range of those policy options.
Okay. I saw in your report that Arroyo Grande, are you going to cover that later?
Well, I was just going to mention, verbally, there have been a number of local cities that have passed ordinances. Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, Morro Bay is looking at beaches again, and City of San Luis is bringing this. I understand a smoking ordinance in their parks is coming up in the next few months. So we're seeing more and more cities take on this issue of smoking in outdoor recreation areas.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Question about the signs. If this is put into place, how will those signs be paid for?
Well, I'm going to get to that. I can answer it now, but
I can wait.
I was going to
okay.
go ahead and talk about
ahead
all of
continue.
Our parks and recreation areas first. Now, this is Colony Park, and you can see the new Colony Park Community Center here. This is the area at the entrance that's already covered by state law. These are the two girls' softball fields at Atascadero Girls Softball Association. And so these are the spectator areas here, here, and here for both fields. So that's what's being suggested was the area that we would place signage and prohibit smoking in the designated area there, especially since our park master plan and the master plan for downtown calls for a convertible street here on Palma, and eventually when our historic City Hall is refurbished, we'll be able to use this entire area for viewing of public events, special events with the closed street. So this area here is what we're proposing be signed and say smoking is prohibited during special events and other spectator activities, just as they would at an athletic event. Now, what about places like Stadium Park? Because we do have other recreation areas throughout the city where we might have gathering special events. We're hearing a lot of talk about the new Creekside property that's coming under city ownership where we could have performing arts and events such as that. Stadium Park is an area where, of course, we do envision in the future public assembly and special events, a lot of performing arts. It is one of our boutique special event locations. This area would be treated the same as the other spectator areas that we've talked about, for example, similar to Sunken Gardens. When there was an event, a special event in Sunken Gardens where there was a gathering of people, we would have probably temporary signs in this case, but perhaps permanent signs that said no smoking here. And my guess is that if we end up using Stadium Park year-round anyway during fire season, we probably won't be allowing smoking there, but that's yet to be determined. But at any rate, This would be one of the areas we'd come back and say we would suggest restricting or prohibiting smoking.
Brady, if I could insert a question in there, because that was, I don't know if the fire chief weighed in on any of this discussion, but I'm having difficulty envisioning smoking ever allowed in Stadium Park just from a fire safety standpoint. Sure, you could argue in the wintertime or something, but is there the potential justification is for an example like that of a banning in the area for whatever reasons?
Yes, Councilmember O'Malley, I agree with you. I think during fire season we will probably not be allowing smoking there. But if I think back, and you probably remember when we had the Pine Mountain Festivals there, and there actually was
checking.
Yeah. Yes. Good point. Now, signage, getting back to Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie's question about signage and cost, we have a lot of leeway in terms of the type of signage we want. We have no skateboarding signs and things like that that we use throughout the city. We would probably propose something similar, a small unobtrusive sign and a couple of those in each area that we've been talking about. I've got some examples here that I got from Christina. Thank you very much. Of some more user-friendly looking signs. We could also add our ordinance number and things like that if we chose to. We estimated the Public Works about $500 for signage costs. However, the Tobacco Control Program will contribute up to 10 signs or disposal receptacles to reduce the city's costs. So that's about half of the signs or so we'll need. So probably to the city, with the contribution from the Tobacco Control Program, the signage for all these areas that we've been talking about tonight would be to the city about $250. So that concludes my report, and I'll be answered to answer any more questions if I may.
I think council has gotten their questions answered. So I'll go ahead and open up to public comment. Please state your name for the record.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members and staff. My name is Wayne Hansen. I'm a resident of Atascadero for 634 Portola Road, and it's a pleasure to be able to speak to you tonight. First of all, I want to thank the Parks Commission for their diligent work in researching this issue and the amount of time they spent deliberating it and working with our coalition and county staff on it. Let me tell you a little bit about the Tobacco Control Coalition. We're a citizens advisory group. We represent citizens from all over the county, and we are advisory to the county health agency and to the Tobacco Control Division of that health agency. Probably more to the point, we're a real resource for communities in that we do a lot of research about identifying risk assessment in various communities, taking a look at needs based on what those, how we assess those risks, looking at resources to address those needs. And in this particular case, we look at the commission, the citizens of the city, that you support health and well-being of the people who live here. You also reduce or eliminate people's exposure to secondhand smoke. We all know smoking is deadly, but now it's become practically a truism that secondhand smoke also is extremely dangerous. You reduce litter, or tobacco-related litter, which at least is unsightly, and as Councilmember O'Malley has pointed out, during the summer it's not only unsightly, it's dangerous. It can start a fire. Again, our proposal, I mean, what we're really suggesting, even though we appreciate what the commission has made as a suggestion to you, really to simplify this whole issue, and I think some of the council members have alluded to this, is when people go into city parks, there, even though there is signage, sometimes it's difficult to determine what is a spectator area, what's not. What I would recommend, and I know that the council can amend any kind of proposal submitted by your commission, that would be to just make it really simple. Make it simple and understandable. Ban smoking in city parks, period. It's easy to enforce. It's easy to understand. It makes sense. It's good public policy. So thank you very much.
appreciate your attention.
Thank you.
Mayor, Council, staff, Mike Latner, Vision Atascadero. I want to take just 1 second to commend you on your decision to adopt the economic development policy and congratulate Jim and the rest of the crew. Fantastic job. It's the type of vision that Atascadero needs and the type of long-term vision that we need. Along those lines, I also want to congratulate you in anticipation of the adoption of a good tobacco control policy. You will join shortly Morro Bay, hopefully, Pismo Beach, Oro Grande, Monterey up the road, Fresno, even Bakersfield has a tobacco control policy. Smoking bans show that you care about the quality of life for citizens and visitors. Tobacco litter is a major public health concern for all cities. It is a major expense, a major medical expense for local medical facilities. It diminishes the beauty of our outdoor areas and causes toxic damage to our watersheds. Smokers often drop butts into gutters, and storms will remain wonderful places that our community can enjoy for generations to come. And with regard to specific details, I think Councilmember O'Malley hit the nail on the head several times. Designated smoking areas are an attempt to maybe, you know, make a moderate amendment to a policy, but it raises important questions about enforcement, and it's a type of micromanagement that is difficult to employ. I think it reminds me at least of Lao Tzu's old statement about governing a state. It's like frying a small fish. You poke it around too much and you spoil it. This is a type of policy that is largely self-enforcing, and it is about changing norms. Smoke is not just smoke. This is largely a policy about reducing smoking as a public health hazard. And the simplest way to adopt a policy, the easiest and simplest and best for business, best for tourism, would probably be to do something like Calabasas has done and just ban smoking in all public areas. But barring that move, a simple ban in public parks is a safe and effective and efficient policy, and I encourage you to adopt it. Thank you.
Good evening, staff, council. Tom Comar, Atascadero. Actually, the speaker before me said everything I was going to say. But as a healthcare provider and a cancer survivor, and I think all of us here are aware of the hazards of smoking and secondhand smoke now, it's been documented. I personally and professionally would like to see a smoking ban from city limit to city limit in Atascadero. That'd be very progressive, I think. But to try to micromanage and say, well, you can only smoke in this area here, I think it's going to cause too many headaches. And I'm glad the commission brought that up. You know, there probably were some smokers on the commission. I don't know. But you're not going to be able to stand next to somebody who's smoking and say, hey, this is a non-smoking zone. And they're going to say, you know, something you. I'm not in the smoking zone. I'm outside the spectator zone. And it's just not going to work, and you're going to be, exposed to it. I think people who are smokers need to have some awareness of the public's right to be free of that type of carcinogen, and that if they want to smoke, they can go get in their car. Now, most people accept you don't drink in your car, right? That's the law. You can't drink in your car. You can't have an open container. But you can smoke in your car. So if you tell people you can go and smoke in your car, then you go and you smoke recreational areas, particularly athletic fields. Thank you.
Mr. Comar, I have a question for you. I know you're a nurse practitioner that works at the state hospital.
Yes.
And they recently imposed a smoking ban there. Can you relate to us any changes that you've seen with the smoking ban at your facility?
Well, it was, yeah, they did it for everybody, staff. And initially, they had staff were allowed to go outside and smoke in a certain area. None of the patients in the hospital could smoke. Obviously, they used to smoke out in the yard. CMC and Corrections about 2 years ago had a smoking ban. They still, if I'm not mistaken, still allow the officers to smoke in front of the. Maybe that's changed now, but they used to just they could smoke, but the inmates couldn't smoke. However, it hasn't changed anything. I mean, it's helped. Everything.
Thank you.
Hello, council members. My name is Clint Slaughter. I'm the chairperson of the board of Eco Slow. I'm also an emergency physician. I've been here for 5.5 years in the county. And a couple things. I mean, smoking, if you see from a healthcare perspective, is one of the most ridiculous things that anybody can choose to do for your own health. If you look at the facts, it's the number one risk factor for having a stroke, number one risk factor for having a heart attack. 90% of all lung cancers are caused by smoking, and most of the other 10% is secondhand smoke. 35% of all cancers are caused directly by smoking. We see so many health effects even in children. Increased risks of otitis media, increased risks of pneumonia and bronchitis, increased asthma from secondhand smoke and smoking in the home. It's unconscionable for parents to smoke around children. It really shouldn't be done. As far as environmental impact, we picked up 347,000 cigarette butts in 2006 from California's Coastal Cleanup Day, and cigarette butts are the most littered item in the world. And in those cigarette butts and in tobacco smoke, there's 4,000 different chemicals, and this includes arsenic and lead and cadmium. These are bad things that we shouldn't be exposing ourselves to. And then the cigarette butts that are on the ground, that goes into our waterways and into our drinking water eventually, and a lot of those things you can't get out through treatment processes. Actually, the Surgeon General said there is no safe level of secondhand smoke. And although I commend the commission by coming up with these divisions, it shows a misunderstanding of how tobacco smoke is dispersed. And you can be within hundreds of yards of tobacco smoke and still inhale some of those toxins and to smoke around them and around their children. So from a medical standpoint, from a public health standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, this ordinance makes a lot of sense, and this is what we should be doing to protect our citizens. Thank you.
Hello, good evening, Mayor, Council members. My name is Christiane Lefebvre, and I'm a resident of Atascadero and a mother of two small children here. I'm also a health education specialist with the County of Slo Public Health Department's Tobacco Control Program. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. Since January 2008, as Brady mentioned, we've been working with a concerned group of students and community members interested in decreasing the danger of secondhand smoke and tobacco litter in our parks, as well as reducing youth smoking. On April of last year, in honor of Earth Day, the students held a tobacco litter cleanup at the Lake Park in order to raise awareness about tobacco's destructive effects on the environment and the community. In 3 hours' time, volunteers found more than 3,400 cigarette butts, equaling close to 6.5 pounds of tobacco litter. These are their butts. In May of 2008, they brought them to the Parks and Recs Commission and asked that their parks be made smoke-free. A shared priority of the volunteers in our program is how to decrease youth smoking in our community. Youth smoking rates are a community problem and have begun to increase for the first time in 10 years in San Luis Obispo County. Unfortunately, in Atascadero, these rates have skyrocketed. The 2007 Healthy Kids survey reported 22% of Atascadero 11th graders smoke. This is an increase of 7% from just last year. And it's impossible to miss kids smoking in places like the Sunken Gardens downtown. Why do kids smoke? They're influenced by seeing people around them who smoke. Friends, family, and other adult leaders are key role models in whether or not kids decide to smoke. How can we as a community work to ensure that kids are surrounded by good role models? Research shows that one way we can do this is by prohibiting smoking in our parks. Studies show that smoking bans can reduce youth smoking by as much as 40%. Smoke-free parks send youth a clear message that tobacco use is an unhealthy, unacceptable behavior and will save lives. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them for you. And I was also just told that we will pay the entire $500 for the signs, too. So, yeah, especially if you don't need the receptacles. So, and I have some rulers for you, too.
You might support this ordinance, but some of the issues closest to my heart come from my practice as a nurse, the well-being of our community and the innocent people that are affected by the tobacco smoke. Secondly, I'm pregnant, and I'm well aware of the risk factors to my baby by being exposed to environmental tobacco smoke. And while I avoid it as much as I can, other than holing up in my house, it's invisible. I can't walk around it. It happens. I breathe it in. And I find it extremely distressing to know that when I breathe that in, the baby that's practicing fetal lung movements, it actually stops those practices. And just 3 weeks ago or so, I was with multiple friends and their newborn babies at Atascadero Lake, and several times smoke drifted into the area. We couldn't see the people were smoking. I don't know where they were, but we all were breathing the smoke. So having said that, I would really stress that you consider a total ban, because we know the effects of the tobacco smoke even from distances. To me, it seems like a very limited ban makes about as much sense as a peeing section in a pool. And then additionally, the other issue I'd like to address is what is in this packet. While tonight it seems we're all on board with the recognition that cigarettes do cause outdoor fires, I know in past meetings there's been some discussion as to whether or not they do. From personal experience, I can tell you absolutely they do. Last summer, just waiting bumper to bumper in traffic to park at a Pozo concert, a person flicked a cigarette butt out two cars in front of us, and within moments, the hillside went up in flames. Maybe 5 or so acres were destroyed before the fire was contained. But I know that's just a story. It's anecdotal. So this packet here for you comes from the United States Fire Administration. It is a publication that they do regularly when data is collected from the National Fire Incident Reporting System. And in that, some of the information I want to share with you is that 655,000, there are 655,000 outdoor fires yearly. It costs us about $154 million. 30% of these fires aren't ever determined, but from the ones that we do know the cause, 12% are matches, 9% are due to cigarettes, and that's what page 7 is, that figure there. So it's true not every single cigarette flicked on the ground starts a fire. And in fact, I had a correspondence with one of our Atascadero City Fire Department captains to discuss that it takes humidity and tender and ignition, all these things to coalesce to just start a fire. But the thing that we can't control the weather, we can't control the grass, but you can control smoking in public.
From Ms. Lefebvre. Began a lifelong addiction to deadly tobacco. It's very hard. She would be here tonight speaking about it because she feels strongly about it. However, she's at a school activity in Southern California, so I'm speaking on her behalf. I think it's important to consider a complete ban in parks, not just a partial ban, for several reasons. But one of the things in reference to youth smoking is that you need to break that connection between tobacco and recreation, and I think a ban does that. You also need to send a message to the youth and the leaders and parents that Atascadero is serious about the health of the youth and about your community. You have to establish a community norm that secondhand smoke is not acceptable, and you have to limit the opportunity for youth to engage in tobacco use. And I think by supporting a ban, and a complete ban would be even better, you do all these things. I also want to mention that I'm a founding member of the Atascadero Community Band, and I have spent many summers Tuesday nights at the Lake Park playing in concerts there. And when we started, there were very few concerts in other communities like Atascadero has had. Now there's concerts, summertime concerts, in every community in this county. And you can bet that if I have a choice to go to a concert in an outdoor venue in Roy Grande or Pismo Beach or Morbay or Atascadero, and it's a smoke-free venue, I'll choose to go to that park, and I'll buy my picnic supplies, and I'll have a nice evening in the park that opposes and does not allow smoking in those venues. And I know there's other people that feel the same way. If they can choose between parks in the county where they have these nice summertime concerts, and they all do, even Templeton does, will choose to go where there is no smoking allowed. I strongly to encourage you to consider a full ban. You were speaking about the cost of signage, and I would think that the cost of signage would be reduced if you have full ban in the parks, because you have to have fewer signs up because there's fewer areas that you have to define within those parks. You have to have fewer litter receptacles because people don't have to put out their cigarettes as they go from one area to the other. I think that would, especially in the Tassadero Lake Park, I can't imagine how often people are going to have to put out their cigarettes to go to the next part where it is allowed or isn't allowed, and how many more receptacles are going to have, and how confusing is that going to be when you look at the maps, the aerial views that you showed earlier of the areas where smoking is allowed per this proposal by the commission. It's very confusing. So when you're on the ground, how much more confusing is it going to be for citizens and for visitors who aren't aware? And you're going to have a lot more signage, a lot more litter receptacles. And I think that, you know, you talk about Atascadero being very friendly to business. I think
Emily,
Looking at the picture up there, I'm a little disappointed. All the shady green areas, the places where I would put a blanket down and have a picnic with my family, are all potential smoking areas. So that unless I want to put a blanket down in front of the pavilion's entrance, I don't really want to go to the park. But I used to walk around the lake while I was pregnant, and every time I would go by the horseshoe pits, I'd walk through cigarette smoke. So I would really encourage a park-wide ban of smoking. I also am sure all of us see the teenagers, I'm guessing teenagers, at Sunken Gardens who are smoking, and I know we can't prevent them from smoking, but we can dissuade them by giving them less places to smoke. Once again, I just would really encourage a park-wide ban on smoking, and thanks for your time.
I'll keep this short. Good evening, Council. My name is Pete Stearden. I'm a member I'm a citizen of live in San Luis Obispo, and I'm as a public community member of the Tobacco Coalition. I want to sum up. I came from Fresno to live out here and get away from the smog and all and fresh air. I don't have too much trouble over there with the cigarette smokers, but out here there's such fresh air that it's really affected me every time I smell it. The secondhand smoke here, maybe they've changed it to over the years the tobacco never used to bother me so much, but it's I think that the cigarettes just really are appalling. So I hope you do a full tobacco ban. It does seem to be almost impossible to just create a little area. It's almost like peeing in a pool. I like that analogy. So with that, I commend you for having this on the as a proposal and to consider it and to pass that. And as a family member, I wouldn't want to even go to a zoo if I had gone there once or twice and I had to put up with a cigarette smoker. So enforcement. There's a lot of at the zoo. You have a lot of people working there that can enforce it. Now, in public parks and all, you might have trouble. People might have to get on the cell phones, or unless you have police enforcement at all times making rounds. But I like the idea of the paddock zoo being tobacco free. Thank you.
They were recently told by the city, I guess last year, they couldn't smoke in their own private club because of a technicality in the law, and I'm no fan of smoking. I helped pass the first no smoking ordinance in the city of San Luis 35 years ago as a no smoking as part of my senior project at Cal Poly because smokers were rude and you couldn't sit in a restaurant without smoke blowing in your face. I've had lots of medical problems due to smoke, respiratory problems because of my duties as a firefighter and other things I've done. So I understand all the medical reasons, but it bothers me when people say smokers don't have any rights. I think most of what the staff has done is reasonable, but I would just suggest you make it a little easier. Include most of the parks, all the parks, and probably good portions of Lake Park. But think about this. An elderly man in a rowboat in the middle of the lake who's fishing can't smoke a cigar or a cigarette and wants to be at peace. Or a man on the other side of the lake by himself at 6 o'clock in the morning would technically be violating a law that is essentially unenforceable, just as the marijuana laws are unenforceable today and can create contempt by our youth for unenforceable laws. And our police have better things to do than respond code 3 to Lake Park for illegal smoking. Reasonable restrictions are in order. Large areas of the park should be, in fact, off limits. When you got barbecue pits belching smoke like crazy from oak fires, it doesn't make any sense to tell someone with a small cigarette, you're polluting the air. They're going to look at you like you're crazy. And no one's going to respect an ordinance of that nature. So if you're going to pass something reasonable. And don't forget, the people who smoke, even though they're not here tonight, most of them are pretty apathetic. And I don't smoke, and I encourage people not to smoke. They still have rights. They pay the bills just like everybody else does, and they shouldn't be isolated and made pariahs in our community. The hand of tyranny and an oppressive government and a nanny state is not far from a society that says you have no rights at all, and banning smoking in your apartment and criminalizing parents who smoke and happen to have children. That's actually been considered and discussed. So whatever you do, I hope you do, whatever you do is reasonable and enforceable. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no one else approach the podium, I'll close the public comment and bring it back to the council. Councilman Kelly.
Yes, after hearing all this, I really don't have any problem with banning smoking in all of the parks. I think if you look at the little maps up there, it's really confusing. It's not enforceable. Parks are for families and kids. But on the other hand, I think we need to have designated smoking areas for the people that do smoke. And those could possibly be isolated out in the parking lots or someplace. But I'm...
The voting that went on in front of the chamber mixer in front of the Lakers was not a scientific sampling. I don't like to take away rights from people. I think that most people, if they're told, please don't smoke, are very courteous about it at this stage because it is banned in many places. I could support designated areas, but I could not support a ban because I feel that those people who pay their taxes and also smoke have a right to use the parks as well.
I know Councilman O'Malley wants to make the motion, but I just wanted to state some things that really pop out at me. Most of you know that I do have an 11-year-old and a 14-year-old, and they're entering that stage of life when they're very impressionable. So when I see that 22% of the high school students in Atascadero smoke, that is a really scary number to me. And the fact that it's going up is not a good sign. And if you do have a 100% ban that you can decrease those number by 40%, think of the service that we're giving to our children if we can make that happen in our community. I think that's a striking figure. And I received 10 emails on this, and one of them did have 300 signatures from Atascadero residents. So, you know, in terms of your concerns, Council Member Fonzi, about having it be a groundswell kind of thing, I think that's part of your answer. Smoke exposure, that's something that's always been a concern to me. Teenager deviance, litter, role modeling, if people see that it's okay, they tend to reflect that. And I don't smoke. My husband doesn't smoke. But you know how teenagers are. They react. So if you don't do something, they're going to do it just to try it out. So even if you're a good role model, they see other adults in the community that do smoke. And I do think that a total ban is a clearer message about the importance of the issue. And... So I think for the health of our youth, I think for the health of those special segments of our community that are more sensitive to smoke, pregnant women, I mean, everyone has a sensitivity to a certain degree, but some are definitely more sensitive than others. So those are the facts that really jump out at me as a parent. I'm also a healthcare worker. I work at the state hospital, and I felt that the state hospital was very progressive by banning it. Think about the number of workers there who quit smoking because they couldn't no longer smoke at work. Before they had the ban at work, everybody, when it was smoking...
Somewhat repetitious. You know, I have a foundation of believing in personal freedoms and property rights, and I understand it's very difficult to enforce morality, but I also think there's just been a lot of cost shifting in some areas in healthcare, and cigarette smoking in general has been one of those areas I think has shifted a lot of burden on to other folks. And I too worked in the healthcare industry for a number of years. Good to see you again, Mr. Hansen, after a lot of years. Retirement's not so bad, is it? But I think when I just consider the health issues and family issues, not only with my dad probably dying a little too young from a little too much smoking, and with kids with asthma, you know, certainly health is a concern. But I think, as been mentioned, I really want to be a family-friendly and an event-friendly city. And I'm also very concerned about safety. As my dad was a fireman for 26 years, I saw a lot of pictures of cigarette butts, cigar butts, matches in fields where, again, that's part of that cost shifting that I don't think is we've ever quite gained a balance in. And quite frankly, my favorite pastime is landscaping, and litter just from smoking just is not compatible. And so with all those things in mind, I'm torn too philosophically on this, but I certainly would join
Councilman Kelly, and at least considering a full ban in all public park areas, I think it'd be easier to enforce. And again, I want to be family friendly and event friendly. I would at some point in the future consider all public areas. I feel to keep balance, I would want to see a more of a public process and discussion in our community and have folks have an opportunity to weigh in on that. But I think for some of the health and family issues, I would certainly be open to that discussion. But I'd be prepared tonight, and I'll so move that we adopt this commission recommendation, modifying it that we ban smoking in all public parks.
I'll second that.
Excuse me, but we're dealing with an ordinance here, so we need to be pretty specific about what language we're going to change.
Would you like to assist me on that?
If you give me 1 second.
Sure. Would you like for us to take a short break? Or
that might be helpful.
Motion again, so I'll lead off with you, Brian.
Thank you. If you turn to page 96 of your packet, there's the draft ordinance. These would be the changes. Subsection H would be revised in to read, and I will provide the city clerk with the text after the meeting so that you'll have it for the minutes. H, quote, outdoor recreation areas, end quote, are those areas owned by the city and used by the public for recreation, including but not limited to public parks, open space, and trails. Then we would also add a definition, which would be I, little I, for tobacco product. Now, before I give this definition, I need to inquire of the council as to whether there's an interest in also precluding the use of other tobacco products at public parks and the zoo. That would include snuff, chewing tobacco, and similar products. If you do, then I have a definition for tobacco product that I would recommend.
Yes.
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 Okay, no doubt on that one then.
Unanimous.
Then a little I will be, quote, tobacco product, end quote, means any substance containing tobacco leaf, including but not limited to cigarettes, cigars, pipe tobacco, hookah tobacco, that's spelled H-O-O-K-A-H, tobacco, snuff, chewing tobacco, dipping tobacco, snus, that's S-N-U-S, bidis, B-I-D-I-S, and any other preparation of tobacco, and any product or formulation of matter containing biologically active amounts of nicotine, that is, manufactured, sold, offered for sale, or otherwise distributed with the expectation that the product or matter will be induced into the human body, but does not include any products. And it will read, except for ceremonial or religious purposes, it is unlawful for any person to smoke any substance or use any tobacco product within the Charles Paddock Zoo, city outdoor recreation areas, and public parks, except for paved parking lots. To smoke means the carrying or holding of any lighted cigarette, cigar, or pipe, or any other lighted smoking product or equipment. The balance of the ordinance would remain the same. I can respond to any questions.
Councilman O'Malley, you agree to those changes?
I'm okay with that. I'm going to raise a question about one possible exception. Again, I know there are some groups that have, they might have a particular event that they're sponsoring, such as cigar rolling or something. If, is it possible that, like,
we would do an exception if a group comes to us requesting a road closure, for example. We grant an exception to our rule if there were some specific, I won't call it recreational, but some purpose community group had in mind and came with a request. Could we grant an exception?
Not as the ordinance is presently written.
Okay.
As I've stated.
Well, we still have private property. Folks can do something like that if they want to.
Right. I'll second that.
They could hold
the
parking lot.
That was your motion?
Yeah, I'll go with that as my motion. Thank you.
Well, we need to be clear when you say that. You're going with the ordinance as I've recited it here?
Yes.
And I'll second.
Okay, and there's discussion. Councilmember Fonzie.
Okay. I'm inclined to vote for this because we've put in an area where people can smoke in the parking lot. But I had a question regarding your wordage. You said paved parking lots, and a lot of the parking lots in our area are not paved. Can we remove that word?
Could we put designated parking areas?
I don't care. That would be fine with me.
I'm not sure that I know what the designated parking areas would be or if there are such, so I'd have to defer to...
I think if you just remove the word paved, we're okay, because each park has a parking area.
I personally would like to keep paved because one of the reasons we are keeping it to one area is...
Perhaps Stadium Park being one or others that... have parking areas that are not paved, but that could be a fire hazard. That was my logic to it as to why I went with paved. But if you want to take out paved, you could do that.
Well, I'm okay with leaving it paved because I think each park area does have a paved area. I understand the concern, but, hey, let's just get more parking lots paved.
Okay.
Another incentive.
Further discussion, another item.
Okay.
Well, let me think on this one. I'll come back to it if I need to.
Well, we're going to call the question, so if you want discussion.
Yeah, and let me ask this question, too, because I don't want to make this more complicated, but I'll use Sunken Gardens as an example. And how I would define that would literally, and Sunken Gardens is more unique than other areas, because you could argue that the sidewalk is not within the park area. I would define sidewalk to sidewalk and all internal sidewalks as including in the park area, and I would define the parking area as literally where the cars are outside of the sidewalk. Would that be the way that this ordinance would be interpreted for Sunken Gardens?
I'm going to have to defer to either Warren or Brady to indicate what the property boundaries for the park would be, if they know, and whether that would or wouldn't include the sidewalks.
Would not include the sidewalks. The sidewalks are typically in the public right-of-way, but paths and walkways that aren't sidewalks could be either in or out, so you'd have to look at those on a case-by-case basis.
Can we make an exception for Sunken Gardens to expand and define that boundary? Because I think it is a little more unique situation.
Are you asking, can you... prohibit smoking on the sidewalks surrounding Sunken Gardens?
Yes.
Yes.
So I would like to designate
include
my
that?
Motion as including all sidewalks within Sunken Gardens.
Well, within...
And around.
Yeah, I was going to... Perhaps... I don't know if there's sidewalks around any of your other parks, if you want to limit it just to the sidewalks around Sunken Gardens, or would you
any
include...
Sidewalks
surrounding... other public parks.
I don't think we have another area where there would be sidewalks that I can think of. Paloma Parks, Stadium Park, or the Lake Park.
We have Apple Valley has some sidewalks adjacent to it.
Why don't we just include all sidewalks in that way in the future if there's parks?
Ordinance that we would like signage in the parking lot that says no smoking in the park, only in the parking lot, or other. But I don't want to leave that out and lose that advantage. But whether it's appropriate in the ordinance, I do not know.
Well,
it doesn't sound like it's part of the ordinance.
No, but I do think we want to have good signage that gives direction for anything related to our public areas. So that should be included. And I don't know that we need to be specific on signage, do we,
no.
Brady?
No, we'll develop appropriate signage at all the locations. And just for the council's information, you were
discussing paved and unpaved parking at the park. Just so you know, the unpaved areas, Anza Estates, the arena down there, we have an unpaved parking lot. Also at Palomo Creek Park, we have the Miles Wimp Arena that has an unpaved parking lot. We have some unpaved parking near Stadium Park, as well as in front of the Lake Park, obviously, that section in front of the zoo. So just so you're aware, those are some of the areas that are not paved adjacent to our parks.
Which I would all consider high fire danger areas.
Some of those areas could well be in the summertime.
So I think we're ready to call the question.
No, you're not quite ready, because I need to tell you what the words are going to be on the sidewalks.
Sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
That's all right. That's what I'm here for. After the word public parks, we would insert the words including sidewalks contiguous to these locations.
Very good job.
And then it would continue on from there, except for paved parking lots.
And since this is an ordinance, we will have a second reading. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important that we'll have an opportunity for some feedback, and we could certainly modify this in some areas. So I think everyone needs to be aware of that. But I think there seems to be a lot of unanimity on where we are at this point.
Okay, I think we're ready to call the question.
I'm ready if you are.
Go ahead.
Okay. Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor Bayrou.
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
That's wonderful. I didn't think I'd get that one. So we move on to management reports. Another exciting topic, building permit processing update, new programs and procedures. And I believe that's going to be Warren, I would guess.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Bringing the PowerPoint up here right now. This is and speed up the building permit process within the city. We expect this will encourage more development projects and greater compliance with the building code, which would be benefits to the public. So what's new? Basically, we know that construction equals economic development in Atascadero. The construction industry is one of our largest industries, and it's also one that's most impacted by the current economic downturn. So there's four major initiatives that we've worked on recently. The first, and we talked about this at the OED item earlier, was to reduce our plan check time frames. The second is to start a program that allows early site grading permits. The third is an annual maintenance permit program for larger commercial and multifamily projects. And then the fourth is a simplification of our grading and drainage plan requirements. So in terms of our plan check timeframes, we've cut the timeframes in half. New construction, whether it be commercial, industrial, or residential, is now 4 weeks, used to be 8 weeks. Remodels of smaller projects have been cut down to 3 weeks, and minor tenant improvements and downtown projects are now 2-week processes. The early site grading permit, the way this works is after a project's been through its first plan check and there aren't any significant site issues, they can apply for an early grading permit that would allow them to do rough grading on site, do the compaction, the utility trenching, and even install the foundation forms. The only caveat is they can't pour any concrete until the entire permit's issued.
Warren, quick question about that. What if there are native trees on the site?
We will do the tree protection fencing and any pre-construction meetings prior to any site grading. So we'll do all the environmental protections before we issue this permit. But typically that's all shown on the grading plans, and if it made it through the first check, that's already ready to go.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Warren, in this process here, would retaining walls be permissible?
It would depend if the retaining walls were part of the grading site plan. Typically, they're not. I think the retaining walls are structures, so they end up subject to the structural review. So usually that wouldn't be part of the approval, although they could dig the footings and get ready for the retaining walls.
But there is a size of retaining wall that below a certain height, there, it doesn't require a permit.
Annual maintenance permit. This applies to mainly multifamily and commercial sites where they might have a number of buildings. Some of the larger apartment complexes might benefit from this. That would allow the maintenance of existing electrical, plumbing, or mechanical systems, like replacing water heaters or changing out plugs, that sort of thing. It would require the owner of the building to submit an annual, or excuse me, a quarterly report of any work they've done, and then we would send the inspectors out on a quarterly basis to inspect that work. So what that allows is an apartment complex could apply for the annual permit at the beginning of the year, then they could do all the water heater replacements or plumbing fixes they need, then just fax in the report as they do the work, and then we would go out there on a quarterly basis. Right now, theoretically, they're supposed to come in and get a permit every time they do one of these actions. So we think this will be a nice time savings for these types of property owners in the community.
Well, I just have to inject, very good job on that. That is a brilliant idea. Thank you.
And Warren, I do have a question, of course.
Sure.
Questions. Are they required to bring things up to current code?
Yeah. These maintenance permits.
So when the inspections come around quarterly, they're expected to meet the current code?
Yes. So like with water heaters, they have to have like these seismic straps on them. So that would be one of the things we would be looking for.
And is that clear to when they apply for their annual permit?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know there's a lot of older buildings that, you know, once you touch something, you have to bring it to current code.
Well, and this would just be maintenance. So you can replace like for like under the building code and still be consistent.
Okay.
And one thing I just want to point out, Ken Foreman, the building official, this is all his work. He's come up with all these programs, and he's done all the heavy lifting on this. The next item, this is Russ actually did this. This is the simplified grading and drainage plans. Currently, we have a requirement that all projects have to do grading and drainage calculations, and for smaller projects, especially residential projects, that can be a little cumbersome in that you have to hire a professional engineer to do the work. So the Public Works Department is going to come up with some standard grading and drainage basin details that smaller projects could use. So building the basin is usually not the issue. It's paying the engineer to do the calculations that's really the hang-up. So these things would be basically pre-approved, and you would just select the size that works for your site and then just agree to build it, and that would be a nice time in September or October of this year.
I have another question.
Sure.
So what percentage of building permits, this is not a good year to do that, but what percentage usually in the past has required an engineer stamp? Because it used to be 1,000 feet or over, right?
For the grading? Yeah.
Grading and drainage plans.
For the most part, most all the residential projects, 90% plus, would require engineering, either for the grading or for the drainage requirements or some combination thereof, usually would trigger the engineering requirement. A lot of projects they hire engineers rather than architects to do their work. So a lot of these projects are just done by engineers, whether they needed an engineer or not. A lot of times those were who were hired to do these projects.
So what percentage drop do you expect to see in engineered plans?
It would seem that probably about half the residential sites, as long as they're not doing the grading over the 1,000 cubic yard requirement threshold, then they wouldn't be hiring a engineer just to do the drainage calculations, which right now most of them are probably having to do.
And does that shift any liability to the city in terms of problems after the project is finished?
We don't believe so. These standards that we're going to come up with will be done by engineers. So there'll be engineered solutions that are pre-approved. So they'll be workable. That we're confident they'll be.
We'll have the ability to kick out anything that doesn't fit right.
Yeah, we always have the ability. If there's some sort of safety concern, drainage concern, neighbor compatibility concern, we can always ask for additional information, whether that's engineering or something else, so that we can ensure that the project's constructed correctly.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember O'Malley.
Since you brought up grading, Now, I understand, I had heard that there was a requirement that it was 50 yards was the trigger for needing a permit. However, it's not established whether it's 50 yards a day, a week, a year, or a lifetime of a property. And you'd mentioned 1,000 cubic yards. Could you differentiate, or what is intended by?
Selling and moving all adds toward the 50 cubic yards.
However, that is excluded for landscape and road maintenance. And I'm not sure, is that defined anywhere? What is, for example, if you bring in a truck and trailer load of mulch, that's 20-plus yards. And that, if you did that multiple times, that would still be excluded because it would be landscape maintenance.
Yeah, typically if it's a small landscape project that happens on a periodic basis, that doesn't require a building permit.
And, for example, where I have 5 acres and it's been in the family a generation or two, and the dirt starts at the bottom, top of the hill and works its way to the bottom of the hill, and my dad would, you know, fill up the bottom with a pickup and haul it back to the top again, and it had this life cycle. So if you keep track of 50 yards, then you would have to get a permit at some point in the...
Well, that's not how we do it. So okay. Standard maintenance, that sort of thing, moving dirt around on the site for maintenance purposes doesn't trigger the requirement for a building permit.
Thank you, Tom, for that story.
Thank you.
Do you have another question?
I'll let you off the hook.
Okay. Council Member Fazi.
Thank you. Thank you for so much for coming up with the simplified grading and drainage. I hear more complaints about that from people in the public than any other. Just a question, when the city engineer draws up these plans, will you be using low impact development so that we have less runoff built into these?
Yeah, and that is the intent of our current standard, is to minimize the amount of off-site runoff. And as we do these standards, we want to make sure they're consistent with the new LID requirements. So they're going to be looking at rain gardens and infiltrator trenches and things like that, rain barrels even potentially, of ways to capture and control the water in a way that is most beneficial.
I think it would be helpful if there is some kind of a visual that goes along with what you're presenting to the public, not just a written explanation of what you're looking for, but something they can see.
Okay, we'll keep that in mind.
Thank you.
I don't see any more lights. Do you want to? Have you concluded your report?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Can you follow up on that?
Sure. Go ahead, Councilmember O'Malley.
Quite appropriate to cut me off when I'm starting off in my childhood memories. I appreciate you sparing all of us. But some good points were brought up about the low impact design, and there are some very good designs available. And I wanted to confirm, it sounds like you will have some pre-approved designs that folks could implement that without having an engineer report or anything on us, their personal property, and that would be essentially pre-approved designs that folks could implement dealing with drainage.
Yeah, let me kind of give you an example. Let's say someone's building a house.
Good. Well, that's very cost-effective. Thank you.
Now, adding on to that, if you could, would there be other options in there too? Like if you did X, Y, and Z LID stuff, would you get to have a smaller detention basin?
Yeah, and that's what the alternatives were going to basically look at. Let me go back to those real quick.
I just wanted to clarify your answer.
Yeah, possibly instead of doing basins at all, you could do different sorts of infiltrators, that sort of thing, where maybe piped in, distributed underground as another option.
Okay. Councilmember Kelly.
Yeah, these are just some more great advancements that we're making. We're getting user-friendly across the board, and just great job for you guys. I really appreciate it.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Sorry. I did want to bring up, and you may be looking at this at some point, a number of folks have wondered if we could take another look at gray water systems when we're looking at permit processing, and there certainly are some new alternative systems out there that, especially in these drought times, would be very effective for folks helping to reduce their water needs, especially for landscaping. Is it
possible we may revisit more options in that area?
I think you're in luck, and I think you're going to be very happy. The state of California has just passed some new legislation to simplify the state gray water standards. So we expect in the next month or so that there's going to be a new set of rules coming down from the state that vastly simplifies and expands the possibility to do gray water. So
excellent.
As we get that information, we'll get that out to the public and the council as well. But I think it's exactly what you're talking about.
Good. And I would like to see that move forward, especially in our times of drought.
That's great. That's good news. So this is a receive and file, so we'll do so, and we'll move on. Next item is First Amendment to the Animal Services Contract. I'm not sure who's giving this one. Jim Mulhall, you're giving this report?
Thank you, Mayor and members of the City Council. I'm here to present a very brief report on the upcoming Animal Services Contract, which is going to be the First Amendment. Animal Services, a division of the County Health Agency, the health agency took over Animal Services in January of this year. Prior to that, it was with the County Sheriff's Department. They have a budget of about $2.7 million, and they respond to all issues involving domestic animals. But they have three main requirements by a significant jump from where it was in the previous years and down to 2006. With that thought in mind, myself and the other chiefs of police got together and put a committee together to try and look at these costs and determine why these costs were rising so much with the level of service, which is pretty constant throughout all of our cities. In that respect, we put together this thing in March of 2009, consisting of several committee members, including the County Health Agency with the health director, the manager of the County Animal Services Division, and the police chiefs for San Luis Obispo and Arroyo Grande, and then the finance director from San Luis Obispo. Myself and Rochelle Rickard attended the first meeting, and then as this group went on, they continued to give us updates on their progress. They expect to have this study done to determine these fees and costs and what services are actually provided by September of 2009. Therefore, what we're trying to present tonight is the fact that we'll have a first quarterly payment from July 1 of 2009 to September 30th of $49,860. That cost is calculated about 25% of the current contract and for the fiscal year 2009-10. If the contract costs are reduced as a result of the study, then we'll be credited with the reduced amount of money in subsequent quarters of the contract. But for right now, this is the first quarterly payment in anticipation of what the committee will develop by the end of September. With that thought in mind, and that concludes my presentation, it'll answer any questions.
Any questions from the council? Seeing no lights, we'll open it to the public. Anyone from the public want to comment on this? Seeing none, we'll close it to the public and bring it back to the council. Any discussion or a motion? I can make the motion if you want. Council authorized the city manager to execute a First Amendment to the Animal Services Contract with the County of San Luis Obispo in the amount of $49,860 for the provision of the animal control services from July 1st to September 30th of 2009.
Second.
Motion by myself, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi?
Yes.
Mayor Barrow?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Our next item tonight is authorization for the city attorney to cooperate in litigation challenging the constitutionality of any seizure by the state of street maintenance funds. City Attorney, Mr. Pyrick.
Mayor, members of the council.
Sorry.
Adopt this resolution. There's more than I believe Councilmember O'Malley and I were on a conference call on Monday, I think, and there was more than 75 cities, I think, that already had done it in the first week, and it just came out last week. So we encourage you to adopt this resolution and to direct city attorney to participate with the league and other cities in this endeavor.
So if they do take our money, it'll basically kill all our road projects in town. Is that about right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I got.
It's actually more than kill the road projects because some of these funds are used for the offset of street operations. So it's really the money that pays for street lights and signal lights and
your operations.
So we definitely would feel this. Seeing no lights from the council, I'll open it to the public. Anyone want to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council for a motion. It looks like Councilman O'Malley has his light on.
Yes, I move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember O'Malley, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi. Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi.
Yes.
Mayor Bayrou. 4-0, motion passes.
Yes. Okay, so we're down to the end here. Council announcements and reports. Any announcements? Seeing none. Committee reports. I'm the first one on the list. The Mayor's Roundtable, we basically talked about the state budget again. Is that a big surprise? And we talked about the Constitution Convention and support for that. And I'm sure you guys are all aware of how the League is getting involved and really making a push to protect local funds. So that's pretty much the roundtable. And that's it for me. Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi.
No report.
Councilmember Kelly.
No report.
Councilmember O'Malley.
No report.
Really? Amazing. Thank you. Individual determination or action from anyone? Staff?
No.
Mr. McKinney.
Mayor, you just mentioned the constitutional issues that League California City is working on. I'd sent some information around the July 17th and 18th is when they're having that convention. I think most of you have conflicts. Councilmember Kelly is the only potential person that might be able to go, but we have not committed to go. They would like you to designate that delegate.
We have it by consensus that he would be the one?
Without objection, yes.
Okay. So he is designated, and we will adjourn at 9:07. Good job, everyone.